Hello and welcome to Health Professional Radio. Thank you so much for joining us again. Going to be speaking in this segment with Dr. Shmuel Shoham. He's Associate Professor of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and he's joining us to talk about some convalescent blood plasma trials that are currently underway. Welcome to the program, Dr. Shoham.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
Well, I did, of course, mention your position there at Johns Hopkins. Give us a little bit of your background, and let's talk about these trials.
So I'm an associate professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and my background is in taking care of patients with immunocompromising conditions. And as part of that, I became interested in severe respiratory viral infections. And when this particular infection came onto our shores and across the world, then I was positioned to be able to try to contribute. As far as that, one of the research projects that I had done in the past was using plasma, which is the part of blood that has antibodies in it, as an attempted treatment of influenza virus infections. Now, that particular study, we learned a lot about how to obtain plasma in a clinical situation for use. And also we learned some lessons as to how to do those trials. Now, interestingly, those trials did not show the kind of impact that one would want. But again, we learned a lot about how to do those kind of trials, and we learned our lessons. And one of the lessons that we learned is that for it to be effective, you probably should get it early on in the course of infection, and you need to give plasma with high enough antibody titer to be effective. So when we set about constructing studies to try to figure out if plasma would be effective, we looked at two populations. One is people that have been exposed to an infection but haven't had it yet, and that would be called post-exposure prophylaxis. And then the other one is people that have infection but are not quite sick enough to be in the hospital, and again, using plasma in those people. So one is the using plasma to try to prevent infection from happening in the first place, and the other is to use plasma to try to prevent people that already have infection from progressing further to the point where they need hospitalization. At the same time, a large-scale study was being done by the FDA and Mayo for using plasma in hospitalized patients, and we were involved in terms of providing scientific expertise in terms of that study. What we learned from that study, the inpatient study, was that the plasma was extraordinarily safe, no great safety concerns, and that's not a surprise because we do use plasma, not convalescent plasma, but regular plasma every single day in hospitals in the U.S., and it's a very well-understood product. And then in terms of the convalescent plasma, what we learned was that if you use a high enough dose early enough, that's when you had better outcomes than if you use a low dose of antibodies, plasma with low antibody levels, and you used it late when people were already very sick. So we've used that data to further sharpen our clinical trials, and that's what we're doing, two large-scale randomized clinical trials, exactly the kind of trials that people are looking for, the highest level of evidence that exists in terms of using plasma and comparing convalescent plasma, plasma from survivors, with regular plasma, plasma that is not expected to have high antibody levels, and comparing to see if that which of the two products can be helpful, if any, in terms of preventing an infection. We expect that the plasma from survivors with high antibody levels will be the one that is more effective, but that is what we're doing in terms of the trials.
Are there more details as far as the eligibility for the trial? I mean, you talked about people who've been exposed, people who aren't quite sick enough to go into the hospital. I mean, are we talking about been exposed in the last month, in the last 3 days? Who is eligible and how long will they remain eligible after exposure?
So we expect that people that are having an ongoing exposure, so the situation would be, say, somebody that has a child that went out to the beach, the bars, where have you, comes home with an infection and is living with them in the home, that that is an ongoing exposure. So while that child is symptomatic, then that's an ongoing exposure. And however, if the child comes home and then very quickly people separate from the child, then that is the time of the end of an exposure. So between 4 and 5 days from the last exposure to somebody with an active infection. That's our cutoff. We don't expect if somebody had an exposure a month ago that plasma is going to be very effective or effective at all, because by then they will have either developed the infection and recovered, or didn't develop the infection and then the exposure is gone. So that is the cutoff for the post-exposure. Now, if somebody then, from the child, then they develop the infection themselves, then we expect that in the first week or so, that's when plasma would be effective. Again, if they had symptoms and the symptoms are ongoing and have resolved, then we don't expect that to be effective. So the cutoff for post-exposure prophylaxis is 4 days from the last contact with somebody who has active infection, and for the active infection, then it's 8 days. Now, once we have the person and they've agreed to be part of the trial, then we have 24 hours to get our act together and get them transfused. So it ends up being 5 days and about 8 or 9 days, but that is the cutoff.
Now, you're currently in that process with a patient right now, is that correct?
Correct. So right now I am on the way to overseeing a transfusion for somebody who has active infection. That person was exposed in the past week, developed symptoms earlier this week, just a few days ago, and is still having symptoms. And that person yesterday was approached for participation in the study, agreed to participate in the study. We obtained their blood for blood typing, and then today that person is coming into our transfusion center, and we'll get a unit of plasma. We won't know if they're getting convalescent plasma, plasma from survivors, or if they're getting control plasma. They won't know. We won't know. The blood bank will know, and that's part of the experiment, is to see if which of the two products is able to, if any, is able to halt the progression of infection and hopefully keep that person out of the hospital.
Is there any compensation involved in these trials, or are we just talking about medicines for the illness and maybe transportation?
Sure. So the most important compensation is that the person is able to contribute to our greater knowledge, and to they have an infection now, but hopefully they can contribute to people in the future having a therapy available, and that we can't put a price on, and that is the driver for most people to be part of the study. That having been said, people are inconvenienced, and we do pay a couple hundred dollars for that inconvenience, so that if they miss part of a day of work, or if they have some expenses, then that hopefully takes care of that. We also pay for transportation if they need that to come to our infusion center. We try to have the compensation balanced out so that it's not coercive. We don't want to have people make decisions about participation in a clinical trial based on that providing them income, because we really want to have people make the best decisions for participation in a trial based on their understanding of the safety of it, and in terms of their understanding of the drive for it. That having been said, again, we don't want to have them lose money by being part of the trial. The other compensation is that when somebody is involved in a clinical trial, then immediately they have a team of experts in that area who are involved in their care. So, for example, I had a patient or a subject in a trial that got the transfusion, and she developed she was somebody who was exposed. She developed a low-grade fever and a headache the day after the transfusion, and there's a million, and the fever was a low-grade fever, and there's a million reasons why somebody can have that. It could be related to a thing that's completely unrelated to either the transfusion or to COVID, or it could be that it was a mild reaction to the transfusion that Tylenol usually takes care of, or it could have been that she actually progressed to having an active infection. By that person contacting us, we were able to bring her right back in, take a look at her, do an examination, and do a test for coronavirus on her, the results of which would be available later that day or the next day, which sometimes is more difficult for somebody who's not involved in a clinical trial to get that kind of immediate care by people that are very knowledgeable about coronavirus. So that is an advantage of being a participant in a trial.
Give us a telephone number and a website that we can visit to learn more and to possibly find out if we qualify.
Sure. So the contact number is 888 888- 888-506-1199. That's 888-506-1199. And the website is covidplasmatrials.org. That's spelled COVIDPLASMATRIALS.org.
Great. Well, Dr. Shoham, I appreciate you. I appreciate your efforts in this fight against COVID-19. And I'm hoping that we'll speak again. You know, you can give us some success stories.
Great. Well, the success story that we have so far is that we've been able to enroll dozens of patients at Hopkins and around the country into this trial. We have sites both at Baltimore, Anne Arundel Hospital, all the way ranging from the south at University of Alabama to the north in Rochester, New York, and to the east in Baltimore, to the west all the way in California and everything in between, including in Navajo Nation. And that is already allowing people to participate in trying to meet the challenge of this infection in a way that is scientifically rigorous.
Well, I appreciate you joining us here on the program.
Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Health Professional Radio. I'm your host, Neil Howard, in conversation with Dr. Shmuel Shoham. Audio copies of this program are available at hpr.fm and healthprofessionalradio.com.au.